Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen and the team at the new Mountain View Zen Center. Welcome.
All right.
Yay!
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 Nothing to it, Michael.
Nothing to it.
Sorry we were late. We're actually just putting the finishing touches on putting the room together for the first group that we're having tonight here.
That's very exciting.
I was just saying to the team, it's extraordinary because we thought we were just sending out an email to say, hey, just wanted people to know that we're opening at our new spot and everyone's welcome. And luckily, we didn't want to just put the address up on the website. We don't do that so that people don't just kind of pass by. So we had people say, you know, email us if you plan on coming. We'll send you the directions. And it's going to be a really big crowd tonight.
That is great. And it's a good thing. We have a really big space.
We do. I was just saying to folks that it was a good thing that the space we ended up getting is really big. The room we're standing in right now is, I believe, 1,800 square feet by itself. And then
wow.
There's a couple other little rooms attached to it. But what's great about it is that it not only can accommodate, you know, our weekly meditations, but it can also accommodate large workshops.
Yeah.
So that's really, really good.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Tell me more.
Well, I have my team here, and we thought one of the things that's fun about it is how much it takes a team, it takes the Sangha to put it together. So I might open it up to other folks on the team to talk about what it's like to, it's actually really has been a process. You know, I said before, nothing to it, sort of kidding, because when we found out we were going to have to move out of the Palo Alto Zen Center, you know, we were sad and okay, but we figured we'd find another spot, and it's been a real big challenge to find the right place. And so what's been fun about that is that we've had a team to do it, and it feels like it's fun to have a project to work on together as a Sangha. So
yeah.
I'll pass it to my team to see if anyone wants to speak to that.
Okay, great.
Hi, I'm Claire. I'm one of the people that was involved in finding the new Zen Center. And I just want to appreciate all the team effort and that was put into finding this place. And I actually walked into our new home for the first time 10 minutes ago, and I must say that it is quite beautiful. It has a wonderful ambiance and energy to it, and I'm really looking forward to spending more time here and working with my awareness here. So I'm very grateful.
Great.
This is Anne, and I saw the new place for the first time last Tuesday because we had a team come and do some initial setup of the space.
Yeah.
And we set up a meditation hall in a way that was much smaller than what we've set up for tonight because we actually had such an overwhelming, incredible response. We luckily have a space where we can easily expand the meditation hall because our walls are Soji screens.
Right.
So we have movable walls. But when I got here last Tuesday, about midday, there had already been a team here working all morning, and then I walked in, and I just was floored at how incredible this space was. I just walked into feeling like, Claire just said, so much possibility here, and feeling like we're starting a new era with the Zen Center here in an urban space where there's so much so much time, place for possibility, and the fact that there's so many people that responded for the grand opening tonight, to me, is just testament to the fact that it is a place that's going to, be a place for people to come and practice, and that's very, very exciting that we're going to be able to do more here.
Yes, I can't wait myself.
Hi, Michael, it's Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. What's been really, really fun has been the transformation of the space. Having seen it when it still had cubicles and computers from the last folks who were here, and then watching it grow from an empty space into a Zen center, about midway through the day, we all sort of looked around and looked at each other, and we better start taking our shoes off. It just all of a sudden went from an empty kind of echoey room to this lovely sacred space, and it was just so much fun to be here with folks that, you know, it just all the energy, and it was pretty terrific.
That's great.
Hi, Michael. This is Phil, and I've been on the team looking for the Zen Center for quite some time now. I think it was maybe even a couple of years, but initially just probably the last 8 months. And we looked all over, from Menlo Park to Los Altos, so all these different places, and it feels so good because the place that we found is in Mountain View, which is where we started out. And it feels like, we're back home, so to speak. And I'm like Carolyn, I saw in the very beginning before it was a Zen center, and even at that point it just felt right. It felt like this would make had all kinds of possibilities for our Zen center. And so let's see, we started out in 1982 at the Zen Center in Mountain View, and it is now 2010, and we're back. So it just took a while.
A couple of years.
Yeah. And it's fun to think, Michael, how much it's grown since then. So we had a small center in Mountain View, low those many years ago. Here we are back with also a 320-acre retreat center with countless hermitages and gorgeous buildings, and it's kind of extraordinary, actually.
Yeah.
Sanghas all over the country,
All over the world.
All over the world, yep. Very exciting.
Very, very, very exciting. Anything else you'd like to share about it?
Oh, Michael, this is Anne again. I was just thinking when Jen said that about there's this story about we started out in Mountain View actually in a house, and then had to sell it when we bought the property up in Murphy's. And I just love the story of the stove that Phil actually cleaned in this house when we bought it. And it's still up at the monastery being used in the kitchen up there. So it's just, we can bring it back here. No, I'm just kidding. But it's just amazing how the work and the energy and the effort of all the people who've been involved in this practice continues to bear fruit, and that's something I'm really grateful for.
Great. Thank you.
One other thing, Michael, we're also planning on doing yoga here in the center, and so we have extraordinary yoga teachers, and we think that that's going to be a real gift to us and to other people that, we'll open it up to. And not only are we having a huge group coming for the meditation, we have 14 people coming for orientation for the first time. So that's quite a number. So
that's amazing.
I think we're complete, Michael.
Yes. And I know, Jen, that people are listening from far away. And if they ever come through this area, I'd like to invite them to come join us at the Mountain View Zen Center.
Yeah, exactly. Come see us. Email the monastery. That's always the place to, if you're interested in coming to the Mountain View Center, email us at the monastery and we'll get you set up with an orientation and all that.
Great, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, team.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks. Good night. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I'm here at the new Zen Center too, and I'm not that much help, but I'm enjoying the process a lot. It's true. I keep referring back to I think it was 2004 when we did the Day of Meditation and Prayer at Herb's Pavilion in San Francisco, this airplane hangar-sized building, truly and we transformed it into a magical garden in one day and then took the whole thing apart in the same day. And so we have a great history of those kind of miraculous transformations, and I just witnessed that this afternoon. You know, people come in and just start start transforming the place, and there it is, and it's beautiful. And I mean beautiful. Okay, it's a, you know, it's again, it's a big cavernous room that was used as for offices and all of that. And so, you know, if people come and expect that it's the Taj Mahal, they're not going to be that impressed. But when you consider this, you know, the what it is and where we have it now, and then our plans for the future, where it, what it's going to look like in a month and 6 months and a year, and it's very exciting.
Very fun. Very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, I have a couple of announcements.
All right.
You will be at Yogaville on the weekend of May 7 to 9, and that's in Virginia.
Right. Charlottesville, Virginia.
And you'll be in Felton at Namaste on the weekend of June 18th and 19th. And this is a fundraiser for the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
That's right, it is. Jenny and Paul open up their lovely home and center, yoga center, for us at least once a year. Sometimes they do it twice a year and invite people to come in, and we do a workshop, and every bit of the money goes to the project in Cantalomba. So it's very, it's a fun way to be together and do some introspective work, and also know that it's really directly supporting a project that many of us hold very dear.
Yes, to me it's such a beautiful combination of practice,
mm-hmm,
and supporting the Africa Project.
Yeah.
And if you live in the Asheville area, you can catch Sherry at Malaprop's bookstore on May 2nd at 5 o'clock p.m.
Yeah. Now, you're not mentioning the retreat at Green Cove, so I'm guessing it's full, huh?
I do not have the inside word on that one.
Right. Well, anyway, if people can't get into the retreat, they can make it to Malaprop's. Is that a Sunday night, I think?
May 2nd.
Yeah.
I think Sunday.
We always have a good time at Malaprop's.
Yeah.
I think that's the first, I could be wrong about this, but I think it's the first bookstore that ever sold our book. and I'm almost certain it's the first one I ever gave a talk at. So we're having lots of those back to the early 1980s. Experiences right now.
Great. And all the details for all those events and a multitude more events are all on the website.
Mm.
And we have a lot of callers in the queue, and I want
Good.
To remind people to please keep it to one topic.
Yes.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Jonathan. I'm calling from London.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on in your part of the world?
Well, we've just started the summer. It's everything's starting to bloom.
Good.
It's great to talk to you. For me, it's like getting through to the president or something.
I think that might be a little more challenging.
Well, other spiritual guides are not so easily accessible. But I was just, I've had a strange week because it's the D word again, depression. But I just was wandering around the house thinking, I'm sure I've got this book called The Little Book of Beating the Blues that somebody bought me years ago. And I know it was a good book, so I turned the house upside down looking for it. You know how you get a one-track mind. And then I thought, well, actually, there's the internet. And then I found your show. And I've just spent a few days just considering that I read a lot of your books in the 90s, and then I've actually lived 10 years just back in conditioning. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. It really, it's startling to realize.
And you think, well, I'm not the only one, but you just kind of, it's like a shock, but a good shock.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking,
and of course, you know what the most important thing about this is, right? No beatings, no regret.
Well,
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah, striving to be grateful that you woke up when you did, because it could have been the rest of your life.
I think the subject that's really been on my mind, the thing that sort of triggered all this is sexuality, really. And taking care of yourself. I think the thing that I've really noticed is that whenever, if I mention something like my diet, which is perfectly normal and healthy, my conditioned mind has got hardly anything to say, you know. But if I go into sex and sexuality, I'm a gay man, I live in Britain, I'm just living a normal gay person's life in this contemporary world, and that's what kicks it off for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard to take care of myself while that's going on. That's what I find.
Uh-huh. And so conditioned mind just has a lot of opinions to express about what? The fact that you're gay, or how you live your life, or what that means, or what's its
well,
problem?
All of it. I think the thing that it generates is total confusion, you know, and it's, you know, gay is wrong and it's right, you know, it's a wonderful lifestyle and it's going to destroy you. It goes hand in hand with lots of drinking and smoking and hanging out with lots of crazy people, and you've got to stop all that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's sort of like, and I don't have a spiritual practice, so I'm not going to apologize for that, but that's just the truth, you know. I almost, my mind told me that I couldn't call the show because I didn't have a spiritual practice.
Oh, well. You gave your opinion on that, didn't you? Yeah. So by that you mean you don't meditate regularly?
No, I don't. So I think it's the experience is that it's almost like a loss of the self, you know, because the conditioning has so many positions and so many attitudes and so many ideas that I get to the point. I mean, I'll give you an example. It's like you make the decision, okay, this is going on, I'm going to take care of myself. And then the specifics start. Well, does that mean that I'm going to sleep in a bit longer and rest, or should I drag myself out in bed and do something? And can I have a beer? Should I watch television? Is that banned? And the thing that I get is, you know, where is me in all of this process? That's what gets so hard to find.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Because
you're
the
right.
the conditioned mind is just all over the place, saying like, well, you know, do you remember what your father said when you came out? And do you remember what that was like? And then do you remember the next bit? And
what you're saying, I don't know if you know what a huge awareness you're expressing. Because I'll tell you what it is, just in case you're missing it. Okay, what you're pointing out is the fact that those voices are just after you. Now, if you had a voice that says, you know, you're gay and that's wrong, that's a sin, you're going to go to hell, and that was its point of view and that's what you heard, you could deal with that, okay? But what it's doing, because it's a torturing voice, is that it takes one position, then another position, then another position, then another position, then it brings up something else, then it goes to a completely different topic, then it goes through that, and through that, and through that, and through that. And the only thing that all of it has in common is that it's designed to make you feel bad.
Yes, and it does. And the end point is just such dreadful things like, you know, you don't have a heart, you don't have a self,
okay,
you don't
now,
care. You know, you don't care about anything. It's so deadly. You know.
Now here's the thing, and I don't know if you've read this or you know heard me say it, but it's a critical piece to get. That voice calls you you.
Yes.
Okay. So if I were talking to you, and I am talking to you, and so I will say you. You this, you that's a great awareness that you have. That's
an important thing for you to get, okay? I call you you, because that helps us both know I'm not you. We're two different people, okay? So that voice that is saying these hateful things to you calls you you. So what you can know from that is that that voice does not consider itself to be you. Now, once you get that, once you really get that, then you're going to ask yourself, and why am I devoting my life to feeling bad about what somebody else says? If that were a real person in a real body, how long would you let them talk to you like that before you said, you know, you just don't like me, and I actually don't like you, and we need to go our separate ways?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think the thing that I noticed, I was, you know, I mean, I have an awareness of all of that. I mean, the thing that I picked up that had actually paralyzed me for 3 days was, it said to me that you need to understand how all of this works exactly before you can move forward. And that was such a brilliant line. It really floored me because I believed it. It's like, yes, I do. I have to understand my sexuality before I can live my life, you know?
No, here's the thing. It's not brilliant. It's really silly. but you believed it. That's the important piece of it. You believed it. So if somebody, you know, whatever somebody says to you, if I'm an insurance salesman and I come in, well, I guess I'd be an insurance saleswoman, person, and I come in and say, you know, the odds are that you're going to get this disease and this disease and this disease, and you'll probably be incapacitated in this way, and you need to do this, and you need to do that. You could either say, well, you don't know any of that, and I don't care to spend my life force worrying about it, so go away. But if you believed it, oh my God, what am I going to do? What's going to happen to me? And okay, so the
exactly that's the basis.
There is believing it.
And that's the basis for all the emotion, I know.
That's right. That's right.
I think let
me tell you why before we move on. It's because that voice is talking to somebody very young and unprotected emotionally. Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. If somebody says to a grown person, you know, you need to figure out your sexuality before you can move forward with your life, the response might be something like, sexuality, my life, they're not two separate things. I'm figuring it all out as I go along. But a small child would be stopped utterly by that because, in this case, he doesn't know what's true.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to paint a picture of the kinds of things that something that just made me stop, you know?
Yes. Well, and what I'm trying to underline are the components, okay? So it's a voice that does not consider itself you and refers to you as you, talks to you in really disrespectful, hateful ways, okay? It's talking to somebody who is young enough that he can't stand up for himself because he doesn't actually know what's going on. Okay? So third component of this that to me is really important is for you to find the part of you who's going to take care of that young chap and protect him from those voices.
That was the thing that I was thinking through this afternoon, like the taking care, because it just really struck me, you know, how do you know how to take care when you've never been shown how to do it? I mean, my parents didn't teach me how to do it. My school didn't teach me how to do it. And that, I don't mean to say that from a point of view of like blaming and angry, but you just kind of like realize, I actually don't know.
That's right. But here's the deal. You know what you didn't get. Right?
Yeah.
The only way you can know that
is that you are comparing what you didn't get to what you intuitively know is possible. So if you know it's possible, then it's available to you to do. So you know what that young boy needed growing up that he didn't get. You know what that was. You can give it to him now.
And you believe that the individual can begin this process by giving these things to themselves, don't you?
Yes, I do. Because
and
here,
avoid the process of looking to everybody else.
That's right. Because there are two reasons for that. One, that young part of you really only wants to be cared for by you. Okay? You are his whole world because you are the only one who really knows him or understands him, who's really deeply involved and invested in him. So he's looking to the centered part of you to provide that unconditional love and acceptance for him. And the magical part of this for us as human beings is that that process of going beyond ego to take care of him is what will free you. So it's really a beautiful little system that we are that is available to us. It seems like hell until we catch on, but as soon as we catch on to how it really works and what's possible, it's just it's like a miracle.
I've been listening to your archive. It's just been so helpful. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah, you know what he needs. You now have to delve deep inside, find that unconditional loving part of yourself so that it can be available for him. It's a great journey the two of you are embarking upon.
Okay.
All right. Keep in touch, would you? Let me know how
I
you
will.
Guys do.
Okay. I will. All right.
All
Thank
right.
you. Thank you, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I'm always so inspired when people call in from far away and they're on their own and they find the willingness to call in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Especially against voices that are saying, you shouldn't do this, you can't do this, you're not qualified because of blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
To go up against that. You know, that's such a good point, Michael, because we really don't have to go up against those voices too many times to prove to ourselves that we don't have to listen to them. We can do what our hearts are guiding us to do, and we come out not only okay, we come out fine. We come out really well.
Yes, yeah, feeling great and grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of...
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you.
welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have more callers.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, this is Julianne from Maryland.
Hey, Julianne, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Excellent.
Good.
I don't want to make you nervous or anything like that, but we were just talking about you a couple of days ago.
Oh, my
Yes, I said to somebody from the monastery, have you heard from her? I haven't heard from her on the radio for a long time.
Good to hear your
voice.
Thank you. Yours too.
What's going on?
Okay, well, the content, I guess, that I'll talk about today is art,
mm-hmm.
Which I had talked with you about before, that I wasn't really doing any art, and then I somehow broke through to be able to do a few portraits that were just simple little pen self-portraits, but it was a good breakthrough for me because it was in honor of me and loving myself and trying to give myself that there's this that little girl who really wants to be accepted and loved and trying to kind of give that to her. So I started doing yoga. I have this process where I'm a quick learner with most things and I excel at them very quickly and then I quit before I really master them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what actually happened with yoga. I was doing really, really well with it and it helped me break through to a spot where it gave me this sudden surge of confidence with my art. And it was just like, just do it. You know, I got excited about it. And so I kind of, bounced from yoga back into art, which is really where I always wanted to be. I was kind of doing everything but that. Ego takes over everything if it can.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can see that it's trying to take over the art too, but I've actually been, I've produced like 6 oil paintings that I love. I mean, I can't believe that I'm doing that, so well with it. I'm really excited. But yesterday, I know that, ego is not happy that I'm doing it. At first it was very pure and now it's becoming, scary again.
Uh-huh.
Tell
me about scary.
Well, before I started painting yesterday, I wrote down what I was feeling in my body, and it was this severe panic and my, heart racing, beating hard. I felt sick to my stomach, and really it was rising up into my upper chest and into my midsection, and I just wanted to cry, and I was getting, voices were telling me, just give up, quit, it was terrible. And then I actually, I get this with pretty much everything that I do in life, but I hate for it to be contaminating painting.
Right. Which means that's what that's got to be its ultimate goal.
Right. Yeah.
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 Whatever you love most is the thing it's going to,
right.
Where your weak spot, whatever that is, that's the thing that it's going to go for.
Right. Right. So I pushed through and I painted, and after I painted, I'd forgotten about writing those, the horrible experience down, and I happened to glance at that paper and I was like, oh my gosh, I was feeling energized. I was proud. I was smiling. I was happy. I was amazed at what I had just painted. I was, the contrast, it was such clear proof of, egocentric karmic conditioning telling such strong lies, and the feelings in my body not being representative of what was really, going on
mm-hmm.
in the world,
mm-hmm.
the real world, I guess.
Right,
But I still, it's so hard to, I just needed support. So, I have needed support for a long time, but
yeah.
I feel.
But now, let me,
go ahead.
The place that I want to ask you about is concluding that it's so hard.
I think it sneaked in and got a little hold on you there. Because actually what happened to you was not, it might have been painful, might have been scary, whatever. But the truth of the matter is you triumphed.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you were the winner, which I think is why those voices want you to believe that it was really, really hard.
Yeah, that's true.
Uh-huh. Because then maybe you'll lose some of your confidence. So it's after it tells you that for long enough, you know, it's like you're going to get scared of the next time. Because what if you can't do it the next time? What if it wins the next time?
What if it what?
What if it wins the next time?
Oh,
who
right.
won this one? What if it wins the next one? But
right.
that's not that that becomes less likely with every exchange like this.
Okay. Yes, okay.
Mhm.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I don't know if you know this that I do a blog now. But if you, I was just talking in it. I think the last one that I put up was about this very subject, how hard egocentric karmic conditioning works to make us believe that we are weaker than it is.
Yeah.
So I was just talking to Jonathan, of course, about believing, you know, that's what it's going for all the time, is figuring out what you'll believe. Because as soon as you believe something that's not true, it's got you. So it convinces us that, you know, it's really this big, strong, powerful, tough thing, and maybe you won a round, but, you know, that was a fluke. And ultimately, it's going to come out the winner in this whole thing, which is not true. It's not true at all. It is absolutely finite in its powers. It is an illusion of separation from life. Now, that's mm-hmm. not a strong energy source, okay? You cut
right,
yourself
yeah.
off from life, you don't have a lot to draw upon, all right? And so you, being connected with life, have an infinite supply. And what people do because they believe that they're inferior to those voices is they give up. That if you just hang on, it can't.
Okay.
Yeah. So what is the artist's name? Does she have a name?
The artist.
Yeah.
I think that's actually what it is. Yeah, the artist.
The artist.
I mean, I know that's not very exciting, but...
Well, you know, you could ask her what she wants to be called.
Yeah.
And then when this kind of stuff starts, and not even... Don't wait for it to start, okay?
Right.
Get your relationship with her going now, all right?
Okay.
And so you two gals are in conversation all the time. So you're building a stronger and stronger and stronger bond against those voices when they come up. And pretty soon you'll realize that it's gone off in pursuit of something else, because it'll know that it can't get you in this area. Doesn't mean it won't try again at some point in the future. If it can get you distracted enough that you lose sight of the of keeping up this relationship with the artist.
Yeah. Okay.
You get a sense of how that works?
Yeah.
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 Very good. Very good. So you gals, you know, team up and don't lose sight of one another and what your mission is and what's important to you and how you're going to approach it and what you're not going to put up with and all like that.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds simple when you put it like that. It seems...
It's very doable.
It puts it into perspective.
Yep.
I went back to that place when I was just talking with you. It was... It's a scary place. But...
Only if she's there alone.
Right, yeah.
You know, with this work, one of the things that it's so helpful to keep in mind. You have a lot of people who would be on your team
if you would invite them. So if you were to do a little subpersonality work and you interview all of the people who would like to get on a team, on team success, and all of the skills that they would have to bring to the team, and that alliance is formed and becomes really real to you, so that you know that you're, I think in football there was this old, maybe it still is, this flying wedge, I think it's in football, you know, where these people, the players get together and form, make this wedge shape that can just go through anything. And that's what you're going for, so that you're never alone. That person who gets afraid is never alone. As soon as she starts feeling afraid, she can just call in the troops and feel the support and strength that she has surrounding her.
Okay, yeah. I had this aversion to looking into my subpersonalities when I first started the practice. I guess it was ego, but...
Yes.
I'm
yes,
sure it was
so.
Ego. Yes.
Yeah,
and,
no, don't do that.
There are too many. You know, there are so many. Why would I bother?
Yeah, it's too hard. Oh, God, I can't take that. Right.
So, but yeah, that's really neat to take...
Yeah.
All of the various parts of myself, all of the strengths and the...
Heaven's sake, draw a picture of all of them. Each one of them. Let them have, you know, now you want to talk about honoring somebody. You know, let each one of them have a portrait of themselves.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. They'll like it.
I guess we've got my next slew of projects.
Exactly right.
Put together now.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Well, thank you. I will.
You're very welcome. Let us know.
I appreciate everything. Okay. I will. Call back.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Julianne. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, let's stop, drop, and breathe.
Sounds good.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe. Uh-huh.
Sherry, we have more callers.
All right. I'm making my way around the Zen Center here. And so in case you hear strange noises in the background, that's what's happening. So doesn't it kind of sound like I'm in a cave?
A little bit.
It has that cave-ish feel to it.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Jan in California.
Hey, Jan.
I know I'm going to see you later, but I just had to call because I've been trying for so many weeks. I thought maybe tonight I'll get on.
It's perfect. You must have had an intuition.
I guess so. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Anyway, I just feel like so much has been offered already through the first two callers. I'm just going for team success. What an idea. I just haven't looked at it that way with, you know, working with the subpersonalities.
You know what? I haven't either. Isn't that funny? I mean, I could be wrong. You know, I could say that to every other person, but I don't think so. And it was so perfect that, you know, that here's somebody who really could, with, I suspect, great ease, do portraits of all of these people. But it's a great idea, isn't it? They all want to be on a success team. Who doesn't?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just, what's everybody's role and how can they all contribute? I mean, it's just extended sangha, you know?
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one, I just wanted to run something by you that was with that in mind. It's something that happened today, and it's, you know, the content isn't as important as that it was a familiar process. I had to make a decision about something where I had to report. I had to report some folks, make a decision whether to do that or not. And I knew that whichever decision I made to do it or not to do it, I was going to get, conditioning was really going to have a heyday.
Yep.
And so I made the decision, went ahead, and, you know, it was just hell for a couple hours. I mean, and part of what happened, I shared what I did with someone, and I got a look, that's all it took, of which to me, I projected onto that the look of, oh, now you've done it. Whether that was true or not, I don't know, but that, and it just, that's where it all broke loose. And it was pretty terrible for quite a long time until I remembered, I just went to what do I hear on archives all the time, and it just grabbing it, you know, stop, drop, breathe, surround yourself with everything that you need, that you want to have heard, and I just started doing that. It's like I lifted myself, carried myself out of it, but it was just so, it was so awful before that, and I guess my question is, I heard myself say something that you addressed with the previous caller, and that was, I heard myself saying, this is so terrible, I'll never do this again. You know, like, I'll never make a decision again like this that'll cause me to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And
instead, of course, what we know we want to do is say, okay, bring it on. Here's another way to phrase that.
Yeah.
I'm never going to let her be tortured like that again.
Yes.
Come on, you fools.
Yes.
I'm making every decision that I can possibly make simply to set you off, because your power is going away.
Yeah, because it's amazing to me that it could happen when I know in the heart of hearts that when I'm clear on something and I have to make a decision about it, that there's tremendous strength in that, tremendous strength in it for anybody.
Mm.
And I think some, you know, another part stepped in right after the decision, or, you know,
it
was a very...
Well, just your ambivalence about it. You know, it was a setup. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have gone back and forth about it. But that's, you know, that's just like neon lights for conditioning and self-hatred. You know.
You mean in the process of making a decision.
That's right. Because you're going back and forth. So they're watching. You know, you see those little beady eyes watching to just leap on whichever side, and it's, you know, you're in a vulnerable place. That's a vulnerable position, not to feel certain about something, and not that we need to feel certain. It's just that's a vulnerable position for a person to be in. Now, if it happened, you know, I used to say this about carpentry when I remodeled houses. I would say, you know, if I did whatever this is, you know, put in this kind of window more than once a year, I would probably get good at it, but I don't. So, you know, I'm just making up the whole thing every single time. And it's like that. So if this happened to you, you know, 6 or 8 times a day for the next week, you would know every piece of it. You would know, oh, now I'm going back and forth here, so that means that they're getting ready to pounce on me, whatever I do, and so I really need to be geared up not to take it on, it doesn't work that way. So this happens, and you're not ready. You're kind of caught up in what's going on and thinking about that and whatever, and then innocent,
You know, you say something to somebody, and boom, it's just a perfect setup for a big old load of misery to be dumped on you.
Yeah, it really was.
yeah. And so, again, just to underline it, what we really want to go for is, you know, I need to have this experience more often because I really want to get to the other side of this. I don't ever want to feel that way again. And the way not to feel that way again is to take the power away from the voices, not to do what they would have us do, which is, okay, we'll never stick your neck out again, never make a decision again, never try anything again, never risk, never...
Right. So it's just, yeah, it's stepping forward every time.
Every time. And, you know, I happen to know you, and so I happen to know your mom. And when something happens to one of your children, you don't shrink back and say, oh, now, should I try to take care of them or not? I mean, can you even imagine that? You know, one of your kids is having a really hard time over something, and you're going, well, now it might be too painful for me to jump in there. So I think I'll, no. So that's the attitude that we need to have toward ourselves. As the first sign that she's suffering over this, everybody needs to rush in to take care of her.
Go ahead. Well, I guess what I just saw in you saying that is that apparently, I mean, I know now, my identification with that young part was so strong at the time that there wasn't even the clue that, you know, there was not an adult around.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So I guess it's just, you know, it's just there are certain times it takes longer than others. And there was that flash where all of a sudden the adult was there. Pick it all up. We're getting out of here. No more voices. We're not listening to any of it. We're going out, taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, it's pretty hellish.
Oh, it is hellish. It is. And, you know, one of the aspects of hellish is that it does teach us to come to a little faster.
Yep.
You know, we can learn when I get miserable, I need to. You know, this is what I need to do. It's kind of like if, you know, medical training or first aid. You know, if somebody is bleeding, you do this. If they're in shock, you do this. If they've had a head injury, you do this. You know, you don't look at them and then pick up the book and start reading about all of the possible conditions and what you could do to take care of the person. You know, under these circumstances, we apply this. And awareness practice is a lot like that.
Right,
It's good. And I will say the difficulty that we run into after we've been doing it for a while, after we've been practicing for a while, is these things don't happen as often. And we can kind of get out of practice.
Yeah, I don't know. This was sort of a sideswipe for me.
Yep.
But it was, in a way, it was, I have to say, it was a gift because I now know what you were just pointing to. I already know, and it's interesting you said that, some of the things I need to have right on hand so that when I get the just the slightest glimmer of what's starting or what's going on, I have, you know, I turn to it immediately.
Exactly.
There's no second thought. There's no, uh-oh, what do I do now? You know, there's none of that. It's just,
that's exactly right. Your training is such that it feels automatic.
Yep.
Somebody suffering, this is what we do.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yes, and look forward to seeing you at the new location, and thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
I'll see you in a little bit. Good night.
All right, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. Gary, it's been a lovely show, and there are many lovely events ahead of us this evening.
There are, and we must away to them, and we can do this again possibly next week?
Yes. So we're going to be ending early tonight, and our callers in the queue, I'm going to invite you to call back in again then.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Michael.
Oh, thank you, Sherry.
Thanks to everybody calling in and listening in, and we appreciate it.
Like that, yeah. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.